and welcome to episode 4 of the Made in Chattanooga podcast. We are your hosts this week. I'm Kate, and I'm a copywriter.
And I'm Maurice, and I'm an account executive. And first up today, we're excited to have with us Corinne Hill, the director of the Chattanooga Public Library, speaking to us about the amazing things that they are doing. Welcome to Made in Chattanooga.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. Glad to say thank you, but okay.
Thank you. No, thank you.
Thank you. So, Corinne, we're excited to have you, and we appreciate you carving time out to be with us in your own home space and letting us invade. But we wanted to just get to know you and introduce you to those who haven't met you before. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been here in Chattanooga?
I have been in Chattanooga. Today's the 16th, right?
Correct.
I rolled into town 6 years ago, February 16th.
Happy so this anniversary.
Is an anniversary. Ding, ding, ding. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of serendipitous.
We knew that. We have a gift waiting.
Excellent. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I love gifts.
And so what brought you to Chattanooga?
The job. It was extremely interesting to me what the library board here in Chattanooga wanted to do with its public library. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was incredibly progressive, and they supported the vision that I had for a public library, certainly into the 21st century, and it was a great match.
Okay. So what would be your elevator ride recap of where you've come from to getting here now, like how you got into the library system and becoming a librarian?
You mean all the way back or just Chattanooga?
All the way back.
All the way back.
You're in an elevator. You're with me. Gotcha. We're going up 2 floors.
We want it all.
Okay. Accidental librarian. Never intended to do it till I graduated with my undergrad in English and then went to library school, found public libraries, and always knew that I wanted to be in administration. And every job I took was a step that took me towards that. And came from Dallas as their assistant director and then interim director and landed here. Always wanted to be a director of a medium-sized library system.
Amazing.
You're in the right spot for it.
Yes, I am.
Definitely. So, kicking things off, why is it important to keep libraries updated and accessible to the community?
So, libraries are... it's pretty much the last democratic space. We are free, we are open to the public, and I use the term free in that we serve people free. It's not free to run a library. Libraries still cost money to run.
Oh, it's not magical?
It's not magical. It is not magical. And but we do serve the citizens. We do serve people, and that part is free. So it's your tax dollars at work. So providing that and also being kind of on the fringe of assisting with education, doing, you know, offering after school programs, helping with that, helping with lifelong learning, and basically being whatever you need to be to serve a curious community is what a library is. And so when you think about it, you know, we've been around for about 3,000 years. And we've survived because we evolve, and we evolve, we do it very, very well, such as when we pivoted for the changes that started happening in 2008 and became far much more than books. So it's important that we be what the community needs us to be when they need that, not 2 years after they need it, but when they need it. So we need to be incredibly flexible for that. But we're here to help the community, and we're here to help make communities better and to make them stronger and to bring people together.
Okay, amazing. So in mentioning lifelong learners and being there for the community needs now rather than like catching up, what are you all doing currently or planning to do to stay up to date and to stay useful to the community members, especially from all the age groups that you cover?
Oh, gosh. So first and foremost, I mean, we still are alive and well when it comes to books. Absolutely. It's my bread and butter, especially children's books. Definitely, you know, that's my product. After that, you get into making things digital, having things available that are digital, like streaming film and streaming audiobooks. and managing that component of the public who really want that, who have long commutes, who are traveling, et cetera, or people who simply like audio or video. So delivering different formats to people is also important. But also, like I said, I keep coming back to curiosity and people who just find the world really interesting. And so offering them opportunities to explore things that they just hear about or read about. And actually, like the 3D printers, you know, that we introduced 5 years ago that people were hearing about, but no one had ever seen one in action or wasn't able to use one. It's like, this is an opportunity for you to explore things. So things we're also looking at right now, we're looking at starting a tool collection so that if you've got some work you need to do at home, you don't have to actually go out and buy a power drill. You can come here and check it out and take it home. That whole sharing concept is expanding. We have a sewing lab. We have our vinyl cutter is very popular. So, and then this studio, of course, is also an example of when we started putting together the idea of having a music, you know, a music room, what exactly does the community need in that regard? And what we found was that there are very few places in town where people can record, and the ones that are expensive. And so having that available to the community is a big deal. And then what we're working on, we just launched last week, is the Chattanooga Memory Project, which I'm really proud of because it's a way to capture a city's history and to do it in a crowdsourcing manner. So there's still some curation to it, but allowing people the forum and the platform to tell their story and their memories. And it's not just from 50 years ago or 20 years ago. You know, this is perfectly appropriate for the Chattanooga Memory Project site because tomorrow this will be history. And it shows, to me, it shows how the library, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when people say, what were they doing in there? We have real live examples of that. So it's capturing a city, not just its past, but its moment. And so that we can move forward. So I'm super excited about doing that. But it's all about really trying to make certain that we have our pulse on the community. And we do that by, you know, we don't serve the community. We are the community. We're part of the community. And so it becomes organic. It needs to be an organic experience.
Okay. And with thinking about this organic experience and being a part of the community, what do you think are some of the larger needs that you all are trying to proactively be a part of or help with? I know that you all, especially on the children's floor, are actively involved in Chattanooga 2.0 and initiatives mm-hmm. like that. What are other things or programs that you all are looking at and engaging with in being a part of the community and also fostering that organic aspect?
So one of the things we're working closely with the Hamilton County school system and you know, they're all our children and it's everyone's responsibility to make sure that our children are educated and have experiences that prepare them as they move forward in life. And that they have the best life that they can have. And so we're really working, like I said, very, very closely with them. We started out a few years back offering library cards to every child at registration, K through 12. So that was part of that project. And now one of the things that we're getting ready to launch is a summer reading list and recommended reading that is not just stuff. What we noticed, okay, so back up. So what we noticed was a lot of the kids were coming in with reading lists that were pretty outdated, and in many instances, the books weren't available for purchase. They were out of print. So we decided to put together our own list, and we wanted it to and put like professional librarians in place. This is what we do. This is what we're really good at. And then develop a list that is not just with stuff that we can buy that's in print, but also with a real paying attention to the diversity of the community that we served so that every child, regardless of your age, can see themselves in the books that they read, but also bilingual books, making certain that we had graphic novels on there. So, I mean, different, you know, yes, you can get Catcher in the Rye, but you also want to make sure that people have access to current materials that kids will find interesting. When I was a librarian, I remember talking to a kid about having to read a biography right in the summer, and my question to him was, do you want to read about somebody dead or somebody alive? And, and he said, alive, please. And I'm like, oh, okay, so we got, this is the alive section. So we went from there. I mean, you know, so anyway, it's kind of meeting that kind of, that demand of their, where they, meet them where they're at type of idea, whether that's emotionally or physically. So, other programs that we're working on, we work really closely with the city. So right now we're working on, we're going to have a presence in the Avondale YFD Center when it opens. They're getting ready to break ground on that if they haven't already. Super excited about that. Avondale's a community that we don't have a presence, so I'm super excited to see us going in there. And really, and again, we're also getting ready to start a service plan, which will help us identify what services we are delivering and to whom we are delivering them, as well as services we're not delivering that perhaps we should be, and who are we not serving. So will help us identify, and then those services, what's the best way to push them out? Because not everything can be solved with brick and mortar. Sometimes it just doesn't need to be. So what is the best way for us to deliver those services to that particular community so that everybody gets what they want?
Now, with everything that you just talked about and what we've discussed so far, are these common things across the board for many libraries, or are we kind of paving the way of pushing the limits and not sticking to the traditional brick and mortar aspects here in Chattanooga?
I think there's a little bit of both going on. I mean, there are some libraries in the country that are doing amazing things, like the Free Library of Philadelphia that has a food literacy program and a commercial kitchen, and they are doing amazing work with their immigrant communities. And then we have, like I said, this studio, a lot of libraries have studios, but not to the extent that we have, the size, the type of equipment we have, the level of the equipment we have. So that's a little bit different. The Memory Project is definitely a first that we're rolling out and kind of leading the way, that this is a new way to think about a city's history and a city's archives. So we're kind of leading the way on that. We led the way 5 years ago on makerspaces, but that's pretty common now. I mean, you know, most people, almost everyone that I know of, the libraries that I, you know, people I hang out with, they all have makerspaces. Yeah. So it's a little bit of both.
Okay. So if you had to throw some money on the table, make a bet in talking about, like, what the future could look like for libraries or what's to come. I know that when you and I talked a little bit earlier in the month, you mentioned something that has stuck with me since, that someone made a statement to you that libraries are now responsible for creating a new nostalgia for people and for the upcoming generations, because we all have different, you know, connections and memories to libraries, but it can't be those same things for the kids of today. So if you had to just go wild, what would you think would be the next, in 20 years, thing that libraries are going to have to start investing in or looking into? So example being, we've gone from years ago implementing the internet coming alive to 3D printing makerspaces now, like out in the future, what do you see?
What's next?
So I think we're going to have to, and this is in 20 years, I think this is coming up. We're going to have to wrap our heads around what's happening with voice in our culture, in the voice-activated type of equipment. I think that's something that we need to pay attention to. I don't lose sleep over it, but I think it's definitely on the horizon and something we need to be watching. I always like to watch what's on the fringe. And because what's on the fringe very quickly moves into the center. So, some people would argue, of course, that the voice is not on the fringe, but it's it's moved in a little bit. So I think the voice thing is something that voice activation is something we have to pay attention to. I think virtual reality, augmented reality, those things are going to become more and more real. It feels like an oxymoron. So I think those things are going to be tools that we're going to have to pay attention to and learn how to integrate those into the current library environment. So it's simply, I think, continuing to do what we have always done, which is to be ready to pivot for whatever happens, because it's very, one of the things about predicting the future is no one can really predict the future.
Yeah.
But what you can do is prepare your organization or your industry for the futures. And that means being ready to take on whatever that is.
So how, as a community, can we invest in the library to continue to make it a space that people uphold and come to be lifelong, to continue to be lifelong learners?
Well, I think, there's two ways to do it, quite frankly. And I love it when people come here, and I love when people come in and have wonderful experiences. And I'm also thankful when people come and don't have such a wonderful experience and then talk to us about it, because that helps make us better. I'm a big believer in continuous improvement. So hearing the stuff that isn't working is just as important as the accolades for the stuff you're doing correctly. I lost my train of thought. Okay. What can people do? So we have the people who really use us and really engage and embrace us and are here all the time. But I also understand that it's not everybody's thing, right? So, and I get that. I mean, there are, like, I don't go to the gym. That's not, I'm not going to buy a gym membership. You know, there's certain things some people don't do. So, but what I do believe and what I do want from the community is that the philosophy of a city that says, if we're going to be a great city, we have to have a great library. And we have to have a library that we're proud of. And the fact that I've never gone in there, I'm still proud of it. I still drive by it and go, that's our public library. And you know they're doing this and this and this. And to support us, not just emotionally, but also to support us when it comes to funding, when it comes to, you know, when we need help, which is usually with funding. So to provide that support and the understanding as a community that this is a really, really important it's an important building, it's an important philosophy, it's an important democratic function to have an amazing public library in your city, and that we're not going to accept anything less.
That's amazing. So we have a tradition within our company and our culture where we ask any guests that we are having into our home. And since you all have allowed us to make this a temporary home on the occasion, we would like to extend this question to you. And I'm going to let Kate take it away.
Okay. So we like to play this game called Laminate. And whatever you pick as your answers, it's laminated. And that's what you get for the rest of your life. So imagine that you have 5 condiments, each one coming out of your fingers. What are your 5 condiments that you want for the rest of your life? And then we laminate it.
Like real condiments?
Yes.
Like the real deal, like ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ketchup.
Well, well,
disclaimer.
We don't want to mess up your theory of condiments, but there has been many debates on breaking that mold of just your traditional ketchup, salt, and pepper. So just going to throw that out
there. I'm very literal.
Okay.
Very literal. So, yeah.
It's that English major thing. I'm too.
Very literal. It's like, you know, I need you to do a program on how to put a coffee shop in a library. And the title is How to Put a Coffee Shop in the Library, which was rewritten into Lattes at the Library. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of, I had nothing to do with it. So, yeah, it's this kind of stuff I'm really literal about. And I'm really passionate about my condiments.
Okay. So ketchup out of the thumb?
So ketchup, yellow mustard, none of this fancy stuff. I want the kids' mustard, mayonnaise, and none of this fat-free stuff. I want the real deal. All right? Yeah. All the fat. I want all of that.
Fat-free mayonnaise isn't real mayonnaise.
No, it's not real mayonnaise. And I like mayonnaise on my French fries.
Oh.
So that's 3. Oh, Tabasco.
Mm.
Absolutely. And the big bottle, not that little, not those little, you know, sissy ones. I like the big one. So Tabasco is the other one that I love. And what is my fifth condiment, my fifth go-to? I'd go with, it's not really a condiment, but it's a cornichons, my other. That's my other, like, yeah.
And that is?
The cornichon is a, it's a little itty bitty pickle.
Oh. I was about to say ketchup, mustard, mayo, relish.
Yeah, no, cornichon. We're not gonna, none of this relish.
We won't go there.
I want kids mustard, but I want grown-up pickles.
Balance, right?
Yeah. Well, we can't thank you enough for, again, taking time out of your schedule and being with us today.
Oh,
and
thanks.
For just sharing and educating us on libraries of today, but more so what our Chattanooga community is doing and standing for.
Thanks for having me.
Thank
it's been
you.
A blast.
Thank you. Next up, we have Sarah Obenauer in the studio with us. Sarah and her husband Alex started Make a Mark, a 12-hour design and development marathon that benefits local humanitarian organizations. So, hi, Sarah. We're glad you could be with us today.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So, tell us a little bit about Make a Mark. How did it get started? How did it come to be?
Yeah, so Make a Mark really started, planning really started on it about 4 years ago. I was working at a nonprofit organization back in Roanoke, Virginia, where we were living and working at the time, and really loved working at the nonprofit organization. It was super small, super engaged staff, and we were working really to save lives on the road. So it was a teen traffic organization that really was to fighting to empower students and to empower youth to be advocates and leaders in their community for traffic safety. And because we were a small staff, we all wore a lot of hats. So we came with, I came in particular with some background in design, but not a lot. I basically just had a design eye, and I knew how to tell a story. And I knew I wanted to get better at design. And so it was really an opportunity there to kind of explore that and to learn more about that and grow that. And so I was really self-taught along the way in design and started implementing it piece by piece because I knew if we were going to reach a young audience, we needed to engage in that way. The power of design is incredible. It tells a story all on its own that can't just be done by written words. So played with that a little bit and really saw the power of that. And we started getting more grant funding. We started getting more donations. We started really just seeing students want to engage with the program and seeing it as an encouraging program that they could be part of, a program that was saving lives and impacting other students in their communities. And that really hit the spark of just not just wanting to learn more about design and master design, but really seeing the impact of it in a really meaningful way and how that can move organizations forward and save lives ultimately. So that was really the beginning of that, and tried to implement more in the nonprofit organization as I went. And then as I was transitioning to another role, working for a B2B technology company, I knew that I still needed that humanitarian piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so I chatted with my husband, Alex. I chatted with other designers in the area and really brainstormed this idea of a humanitarian hackathon initially. And then it really evolved and transformed into how do we design, how do we tell stories, how do we brand organizations, create websites, really help nonprofits embrace technology. And it's kind of grown since then. And now we're here in Chattanooga and are doing it in some other places. So we're super excited to really just serve more organizations.
Awesome. So how did Make a Mark make its way to Chattanooga?
Yeah, so Make a Mark came with us. Make a Mark is a perfect fit for Chattanooga. And I think that's why we moved to Chattanooga. And I think that's why Make a Mark makes so much sense here. When we were moving, so many people were so welcoming. And we were able to learn about the unique community that's here, about how encouraging and empowering people are to other individuals that want to serve their community in an impactful way. We talked to people like Causeway. We talked to the people at the Edney and just really learned what was already happening here in Chattanooga, and that this community embraces people that have ideas that want to explore something new to better the city and to better the surrounding area. So it was a no-brainer that we were going to do Make a Mark here, and it was just so easy to start the process here because so many people were excited to support us.
Absolutely, and that's one of the best things about Chattanooga.
Absolutely.
So in addition to Roanoke and Chattanooga, Make a Mark has some presence in some other cities. Where else are Make a Mark events hosted?
Yeah, so we just did our very first event in New York City, which was amazing and a totally different culture. And it's really exciting to see that growth, but also to see the unique communities and to see the different talents that these communities bring. So we just did New York. We have a Baltimore event coming up, which I'm really excited about because it's being led by somebody that was initially part of this Roanoke Blacksburg event.
Aww.
So it's cool to see it go with her and to see what she's turning it into, which is amazing. And we're also planning an Asheville event, which we just kind of held an info session and are planning an event for hopefully June. So that'll be a big one. And then we're announcing some new locations later in the year. So,
ooh, how exciting.
Yeah, super exciting. So that'll come soon.
Yay.
Is there any location that once you all infiltrate it, that it's like, we've arrived, we're done, goodbye, farewell?
To me, I kind of thought Chattanooga was going to be that. I was like, man, to me.
Nice answer.
It's to me, it's just cool to be able to continue to do this event here. So as we're growing, other people are kind of taking over site leader roles to plan events because we think that's so important that communities come together and plan their own events and we kind of support them. But I always want to do the Chattanooga event. I always want to do the event that's impacting us here to really see what the nonprofits are doing and what the maker community is doing and how we can help them. So I think I'm just excited to see unique communities spring up. So we have a couple that are coming down the road that will be kind of surprising, I think, when we announce them. So it's really neat to just learn about what makes those communities unique and why people in those areas want to start an event, because I think you learn a lot more that way.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about what goes into planning and hosting one of these marathons. What's that process like?
Yeah, I think it's really fun. It's definitely a long process. It's certainly not a quick one. But it really starts with talking to people and talking to nonprofits in the community and pulling together creatives that might want to be involved to just get their thoughts, hear their concerns, things that are exciting them about it, what we can do to make it a really good experience. And so that's always the first step. But what we really think makes it really special and unique and important is the planning that goes into teams. So the event logistics are super important. We have wonderful community support with food and with spaces, but to me, it's making sure that the nonprofits are prepared, they feel confident coming into the event, to make sure that the makers and all the creatives that are involved and volunteers know what their duties are, but also what they can bring to the table. So it's not just about you're coming in and you're doing something for a nonprofit. We want them to take away something really strong from it too. We want them to get to be able to connect with other creatives, to connect with their nonprofit, and to be able to communicate things to us. So we do a lot of team building around that. And by that, I mean we try to pair people really carefully, mm-hmm. And make sure that there's a good fit, that there's complementing strengths, and that it meets the needs of the nonprofits that we select. So that's very intentional. There's a lot of, okay, let's whiteboard this. No, that's not going to work. Let's try something else. as you would, you know. So it's a really fun process, and I think that's what makes it special. It's also really stressful, but wonderful. And then also just preparing everybody. So we do planning meetings in advance where the makers on the team meet the nonprofits and we're there to facilitate the conversation. And I think that gives us good understanding of how we can be a better support, as well as just an opportunity to connect in advance. So.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice little segue. What is the most rewarding aspect of this whole process?
Oh, gosh. I think
loaded question.
I know. I think there's so many little things along the way. I think when we interview nonprofits, we get to learn about their story of how they came to be, which is always so interesting and compelling, and you really get to learn a lot about a person's heart from that, especially when we work with founders of nonprofits. I think you hear such an interesting story and such a meaningful story, so that's a huge part of it. I think seeing how many makers in a community are willing to give away a Saturday to be involved is huge and always really humbling. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we do demos and everyone presents the projects. And that is a really emotional time. I've never not cried. So I'm working through that. I'm trying. It was really bad in Chattanooga. So I'm determined to not have that happen again because it's really embarrassing.
Challenge accepted.
No, I'm nervous. But that's a really, it's cool to see the reactions of the nonprofits. And ultimately, they come away with this beautiful, really compelling work that they can tell their story, which is amazing. But they also walk away with just like a renewed sense of hope and inspiration for the organization, because people that are specialists in their field, that are experts, people commit their time to them. And I think that's what speaks the most to them, is knowing that people in their community care about what they're doing.
Absolutely. So what excites you the most about the future of Make a Mark, both in Chattanooga and beyond?
I think everything. I think learning new things for me is always exciting. And I'm really, really excited as we have these chapters and other people leading to get a fresh perspective and to hear how each area is unique, to hear how cities in other countries are different, to hear how cities in our own country are different and similar, to learn about work that nonprofits are doing that we may not know about. I continually each year learn about a new problem in our society, which is always daunting to learn about, but I think important for us to know that these problems exist. And so I'm just excited to continue to learn and hopefully be challenged to see how we can do better with Make a Mark in the future. And maybe that's, I think we'll always do this design event, but what that also means as far as other ways we can execute on our purpose. So that's hopefully a plan.
So you mentioned a couple of new cities. Can you give us any hints, or do we have to wait?
I can give hints. We are going international this year, which is very exciting. And probably not immediately where you would expect. So I think that'll be kind of a surprise. We have a couple in the wings that I think you may be able to guess, but this one I think is going to be a surprise. And then we've been mostly on the East Coast and in the southern part of the country. So that will change also this year.
Oh, that's so exciting.
The moment you decide to, I don't know, explore Hawaii, let me know. Willing to volunteer as tribute and like help out, go scout it out if you need be. Just, yeah.
That's a big sacrifice. I appreciate it.
You know, I'm really willing to do that for you.
I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. So we have a little bit of a tradition with the VM Nuga fam. Every time we make a new friend or have a guest or a new hire or anyone, we play this game called Laminate. And we ask you a question, and however you answer it, it's laminated for the rest of your life. So, on this edition of Laminate...
I'm so nervous.
If you could only have 5 condiments for the rest of your life and imagine that each condiment comes out of one finger, what would your 5 condiments be?
And so finger specific, okay.
It can be. It doesn't have to be.
Well, I thought immediately when you said that the first one is easy. If I get one condiment, it's definitely mustard.
So we're starting with the thumb?
I would think so.
All right. specific type of mustard? Are we talking about like just plain old mustard? Are we talking about honey mustard? Are we talking like,
What are we working with? I love all mustard. Across the board. I think that could be like each finger, honestly. But whole grain is my favorite. So there's a place in Asheville called Lusty Monk, and they make, I think it started as a bar, but they make different kinds of mustard, and their like original is super good. So that would be the
awesome
go-to on that one. Yeah.
Mustard.
Oh, gosh. I hate mayonnaise, so it cannot be mayonnaise. Relish, that's a I love relish. Dill relish, though, not sweet. Maybe sweet we'll say for the pinky. Okay. Because I do like that, some, you know, it has its place. Yeah, you don't agree.
This is all about you, not me, not me.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is harder than it should be. Like, I'm really contemplating this.
Now, don't know if this is going to, like, just mess it all up for you or if it's going to help. But again, like, we've had this ongoing debate within our office, slight Hunger Games, but we've calmed it down of the concept of condiments. It broadens.
I know,
so it's not just your traditional things. You can get a little crazy. We may or may not judge you, but that's an option.
So, like, I'm thinking, like, pesto should be a condiment. Mm-hmm. I love pesto.
All right.
Give that to the middle finger. Seems slightly offensive now.
Mm-mm. I mean, you can put pesto on burgers.
Yeah, absolutely. Horseradish.
Ooh. That's a new one.
With, like, oysters? Not so much? Oh, no.
Now that's where we may separate.
We're going to work on
that.
We're
going to draw the line right there.
Oh, no. I need some examples.
I don't remember all five of mine, but ranch, honey mustard, and Duke's mayonnaise were at least three.
Oh, ranch for sure.
Is that ranch, your final answer?
Absolutely, but I'm swapping my pinky and my ring finger now because we'll put the horseradish on pinky just for you. I don't know how I forgot ranch.
Okay.
That's so sad.
So, this is basically maybe the biggest decision you'll make in your life. Actually, we're just going to put that on the record. Are we laminating?
I think so. I'm pretty serious about these, so...
Done deal.
All right.
Done. It's been said. It's been written.
Awesome.
I need to know how that came to be, too. You'll have to
fill
me in.
It's a very long story.
All right. You'll have to fill
me in. It's from a long time ago, but it's a great story.
Had to keep ourselves entertained back then.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to add? Where can we find more info about Make a Mark?
Yeah, well, you can go to letsmakeamark.org to find out more, to learn about how you can get involved, or if you just have any interest in learning about some of the nonprofits that were involved. I think to me, there's a big takeaway from Make a Mark and from this idea of pro bono collaboration, whether it's design or development or videography and photography. And I think to me, that is sharing your skills and sharing hope and empathy with people is really what we try to do with Make a Mark, and I hope that whether it's part of Make a Mark or outside of it, that people find a way to show compassion and love toward one another using the things that they were really trained in or gifted in some capacity. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's been so great having you here talking about Make a Mark. This has been episode 4 of the Made in Chattanooga podcast. Thanks to Sarah and Corinne for joining us.